Blog Talk West. Radio.
I say I will. I'll take the ride. 'Cause I'd rather have connections, pleasure and pain, than be alone here with my pride. Okay, I'll take my shot. This time I'll take my chance. 'Cause that's all I have left. If I don't, if I won't choose love and pride's all I'll have left. If I don't choose love.
Welcome, welcome, and thank you for following me here to Blog Talk Radio, my new home. You've just been listening to the sounds of Laura Kane, and that was her song, Choose Love. You can learn more about this talented lady at laurakane.com. She spells her name LoraCain.com, and you'll hear more of her music over the coming weeks as well. I'm sure you'll come to enjoy it as much as I have. You may know we moved here to Blog Talk because of your feedback. I spent the last 20 months at Passionate Internet Voices Radio, but you, the listener, wanted the shows to be longer so topics could be covered in more depth. You wanted to be able to call in and ask questions sometimes, too. Hey, and now I can play music. I want to thank the talented musicians who offered to let me play their music on the show. So now all this is possible. So please, listeners, keep tuning in each Wednesday night. Make Voices of the Sacred Feminine one of your favorites. And I'll have the 8 o'clock time slot locked in every week. That's 8 o'clock Pacific time. And to celebrate our move, we're having a logo contest. If you'd like to submit a logo for consideration that exemplifies the content of the show, Voices of the Sacred Feminine, please submit a JPEG to me by August 15th. And your art will be seen by everyone every day they tune into the show if your logo is the one chosen. It would be great exposure for your work to the like-minded. Well, tonight, after my What's the Buzz segment, when I discuss what's happening out there in the world related to the Divine Feminine and Divine Feminine ideals, it will be my great pleasure to bring you Lynn Andrews. And our topic for tonight is Woman at the Edge of Two Worlds, Women's Empowerment Through Menopause. You can call in and ask questions toward the end of the interview. The number to call is 718-766-4662. When I see your call on the switchboard, I'll identify you by your area code and welcome you to have a moment to ask Lynn what your question. So here's that number again. If you want to write it down, it's 718-766-4662. But now it's time for my opening segment called What's the Buzz that listeners always say they like so much. There was an interesting article run by Women's Feature Service. The author of the piece is Nadia Faruqi. She's 38 years old. She's a Paris-based photographer who says she's simply mad about the idea of matriarchy in the contemporary world, and she spends much of her time traveling around the globe in search of dying societies where women are still in charge. In fact, that's the title of her article, Unique Societies Where Women Are in Charge. I'm going to tell you just a few little segments about this article that I think you'll find interesting. Most recently, Nadia spent time in Tume, a village 300 kilometers north of Nairobi, Kenya, and returned to Europe with stunning still photographs of women like one named Chile and Nalupi and Consulta and Namjal and others who decided to clear away acacia bushes with their own bare hands to build an entire village only for women. About 30 women from the indigenous tribes of Samburu and Turkana, led by Chile, who's 35, decided one day to leave their abusive husbands and begin life on their own. The village was registered in 2001 under the name Tumai, which in Swahili means hope. Chile already had experience of living in a woman-only community from the days she spent at Umoja, Kenya's first female village, founded in 1990 by 15 Samburu women. The founding residents of Umoja, which in Swahili means unity, were women who had been rendered homeless by their husbands, who had rejected them because they had been gang raped. Today, both Tumai and Umoja have been declared as violence against women-free zones. The rules in Tumai are simple. To live there, women have to be divorced. The women can live with their children, regardless of whether they're boys or girls. However, sons, once they attain the age of 16 years, will have to leave the village, either to find jobs or maybe higher education. Even the daughters leave Tumai once they marry. The 150 residents of Tumai hunt together for roots that they use for food. They build mud homes. They rear chickens and cows and train dogs to guard the village from both jealous men and wild animals like hyenas. Most of the money earned by the women is from tourism. Tours to Tumai are common. Women stage song and dance performances for tourists, as well as sell traditional artifacts, wood carvings, and jewelry. Best-selling handicrafts include gourds, small carved stools propped under the neck while sleeping, shields, spears, wrist knives, and traditional swords called simis. Some women make clothing from local fabrics, including the typical blanket in red blended with black and blue colors used to keep warm during an early morning African safari. Each woman gets to keep 90% of her total earnings for the day, while 10% of it goes into the village treasury. The decision to buy more chickens or to repair a home is taken unanimously. Even when an idea is vetoed, there is little dissent and never any violence. But despite liberating themselves from men, these women do not wish to be labeled as man-haters. Faruqi explains that these women say they're not against men, they're against cruelty and often violent attempts by husbands to dominate them. During the photo shoot, Faruqi found time to talk to Chile because she spoke English that she learned in primary school, but she wasn't able to go to higher education. And now she runs the only primary school in the city of Tumai. When she was about 7 years old, Chile explained that she underwent genital mutilation. The memory of the fear that she was drowning in her own blood and the excruciating pain she experienced at that point still remains fresh in her mind. Although she's a mother of three children, Chile does not remember ever having enjoyed sex. What she did long for sometimes when she was younger, as she revealed to Faruqi, what she longed for was the physical intimacy based on love and affection. For women like Chile, Tumai is not a traditional matriarchal society, but a very modern idea of women who have made a conscious decision to take their life into their own hands, despite the hardship and poverty this entails. The residents actually practice the principle of sharing. Whatever little there is in the village is distributed equally between everyone. Everything that is the reverse of patriarchy is the norm there. The women are gentle with their male children, who even after leaving the village return for visits. The girls are encouraged to study and don't have to undergo genital mutilation. Still photography from Faruqi's visit were recently on display in Vienna at an exhibition titled Fragrances of Light. It was sponsored by the OPEC Fund for International Development at its headquarters in the city. Faruqi's first foray into the workings of matriarchy was in the faraway province south of Shangri-La in southern China, where the Mosu live. Here, it's an ancient custom, as old as 2,000 years old, to remain loyal to mothers, sisters, and daughters. During the 2 months she spent with women who live on the shores of the Lugu Lake, she discovered that the concept of marriage is unknown in that society. Women and men stay together for as long as they're in love. Words like jealousy and rape are not part of the vocabulary here, and women keep children. Women are also the decision makers. They controlled household finances and pass on their family names to their children. A family can be a clan of three generations of women and men directly related to one another. No person gets to own goods and property, and no one accumulates more wealth than another. The relationship of father is not important, and the mother, along with male members of her family, look after the children. This adventurous lens woman, this photographer, Faruqi, has also visited the Kasai tribe in Meghalaya in northeastern India, where property is passed down from mother to the youngest daughter. When marriages don't work out among the Kasais, couples are allowed to separate and marry other people. Very revealing indeed. This is the lens of fearless Nadia. I thought that was really interesting for folks that would be tuning in to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. Well, now let's get to our guest tonight, Lynn Andrews. Lynn, you still there with me, huh?
Yes, I'm here.
So what did you think of, what did you think about that article?
Well, it's quite interesting. It's fascinating, and it is true. You know, one thing I was going to ask you tonight is, instead of you asking me, I thought I'd ask you, where do you think the power of the feminine is today? When we talk about the feminist movement years ago, it was one aspect of perhaps balancing male power with female power. But where has that gone today? I mean, what you were reading a little bit earlier is very, very important, but it is the ancient female society that has kind of lingered so fortunately within the walls of patriarchy. And what do you think? What is feminism today?
Well, you know, I think it's a lot of different things. I don't think there's one answer. From talking to guests and giving lectures and research and just resources that always seem to float by me, I think the sacred feminine is really resurging and being born in a lot of different areas. I interviewed a guest once who wrote a book called The Unknown She. And she didn't even know about many of the women who we consider foremothers of goddess spirituality. She had gone around the world. She had talked to Sufis and Buddhists and Native Americans, and I can't even remember all the different traditions of people, women and men. In fact, if memory serves me right, there were more men in her book than women who were coming to ideals of the sacred feminine.
But what about here? In our world, of this time, and we're of this soil, what are we doing? I mean, you see a film like The Stoning of Saroyo in the Middle East, that new film that has just come out. Where is everybody with the inequities to the female now and here? You know,
Well, these people that I'm talking about are not in the past. These are people in the present that are working in their cities and their countries to raise ideals of the sacred feminine. I mean, I was just at a feminist conference not that many months ago. It was a Methodist Christian feminist conference, and there are women still fighting tooth and nail within the church and making headway to bring Sophia, or the female, into the church. There are men like Father Roy Bourgeois, who had been a priest all his life, who were standing up to the Vatican saying women should be ordained. You know, there's lots of people out there that are fighting for this, but you know, there's got to be a lot more. There certainly isn't enough, if that's your point, Lynn.
Well, no, there isn't enough, and it tends to be political or gender specific. I don't know. It's disturbing to me because I don't see the building of a whole new way of seeing the world. And when I wrote Medicine Woman, it was published in 1980. And that book I wrote because not only the love for my teachers and because of the experience that I'd had with them, but for the love of the female. And the beginning, you know, I was writing about woman, take your power, not as a militant feminist, but as a beautiful magnificent woman in the world. Take your power, be proud of it, don't be afraid of your power. So many women are so afraid of their power because they think, if I take my power, I won't be loved. And in many instances, that might be true, but you have to have enough of an intent to be able to surpass that. Anyway, I'm getting way, way off the subject of what we were going to talk about. But go ahead.
No, I was going to say, go right ahead. I love talking to you about this and getting your feedback about how things have changed or haven't changed. So please, feel free.
No, it's okay. I don't want to get in. It's so often when you get into this subject, all of a sudden it's political. And I think it's a spiritual subject. I think it's spiritual in the sense that you have to address your soul. You have to address the meaning of your life. When I wrote Woman at the Edge of Two Worlds, A Spiritual Journey of Menopause, I wanted every woman to understand that the rites of passage in your life, in a sense, are the most important passages that you go through in a lifetime, and that wise blood is a fabulous time, a fabulously powerful spiritual time. And the issue of menopause has always been salient, but today, as we women of the baby boom reach this momentous juncture in our lives, the subject's significance reaches epic proportion. And there has not been enough research, even today. The wise teachings of seminars and books and experience, most people, that if you want to clear a room in about 5 seconds, just mention menopause, and everybody heads for the door, rather than, go ahead.
Well, it does sort of have a negative connotation, I'll admit, but, you know, I think it's changing. You know, first let me backtrack just a little bit, because, you know, you said today you think that maybe the, you know, ideals of, you know, the sacred feminine, divine feminine, it's political. You know, I think it is political, but I think it's still archetypal, it's still about deity. You know, I look at it as like a three-pronged, fork or something. It's about deity, archetype, and ideal. You know, some people can't buy the deity part, but they can buy the archetypal part. They can see the ideal. And you look at how the people rose up in Iran. You look at how the people in our country at the grassroots level got together and, elected Barack Obama. You know, I think, you know, partnership and the needs of the many, not the needs of the few, fighting the establishment, fighting the patriarchy, I think that's part of it. And, you know, if ideals of the sacred feminine are going to be reborn in our world, I think they not only have to happen within ourselves, but I think they have to happen in our community and the world. It's almost like we have to work on both simultaneously, you know?
Well, I think you're right, but I think you don't fight the patriarch. You make yourself strong so that when the two stand side by side, they're in balance. The goddess has to stand with the god. One extreme never serves you. You cannot
absolutely
extreme to the other. And I have written about 19 books at this point about really and truly the spiritual journey of finding the meaning of your life, how to do that. The problem is, I think, is that we talk so much about, oh, this isn't good and that's not good and blah, 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 blah. We don't show people how to heal the incredible abuse that so many women go through in childhood, and certainly men as well, that you have to heal the female, may I just add this for a second, within a man as well as the female woman, magnificent goddess being that we are. And but you have to learn how to approach wellness, how to approach a place in your anthropology of spirit, if you will, where you can tear down the walls against enlightenment, the walls that have kept protected against pain because of your abuse, and begin to learn about joy, about allowing the truth to come into you without that sacred wheel of neediness always spinning over your head and in your heart. We have to educate. It really is what I'm saying. You have to educate yourself so that you know how. Your father was abusive to you. Okay. Let's find out where all of that lives in your body. How has being a puella eternus, which in Latin means the internal child, how do you deal with someone who is a puer or a puella, like Michael Jackson was? He was Peter Pan. He never wanted to grow up. He played with children, but he was magnificent in his creativity, as so many puers and puellas are. They come out of abuse, but as they move into their life, their adult life, they tend to sabotage their success. And I saw that over on book tour, and I wanted to work with these people. We would work together, and I thought, my God, I'm only one person. So I started school, finally. You know, I thought, okay, take these teachings of all these 19 books, the teachings that the Sisterhood of the Shields and I have worked with, and they're very ancient, and they really are about the sacred feminine woman, sacred woman power that has come to this earth and has been forgotten in so many ways. How to re-educate, how to bring that back so that you have a consciousness that is developing balance and harmony and joy. So how do you do that with someone who's clinically depressed or spiritually bereft? You begin to work with them through the process of experience. I designed the school as a school without walls, and it first I thought, and Karen, you'll appreciate this, I thought, well, we can do this in 1 year. And then I realized that, you know, we'd only learned about what energy is and how do you use it, what are the different mother energies, the rainbow mother, the great nurturing mother, teeth mother, the dark sister, you know, how do these all fit together? We all have every one of these female energies inside of us, but we work with usually one or two of them and are not aware of what we're doing. So we taught all of that in the first year, and then in the second year I decided, well, you better learn how to deal with your emotions, and where does it live in your body, and how has it affected how you've made your choices. And then all of a sudden it was the third year, and we were talking about the sacred marriage of the sacred twins, your female and male aspects of self, and the sacred marriage held within the marriage basket that symbolizes that wedding of incredible energy. And then, of course, the fourth year is all about manifestation. Okay, now you learn these things. You learned how to hold power in a drum or a rattle or an altar. Now, how do you manifest this into the world? So you get a degree in become a minister. You're a shaman and a minister and a being of light, and you learn how to do beautiful ceremonies with people and, you know, using singing and drumming and music and all sorts of things. And all of a sudden, your frequency has shifted from a place of fear, a place of feeling not worthy, to a place of, oh, my gosh, I know what she's been talking about. I'm finding my joy. So my books, you know, are about my work as a dilettante who thought I was so marvelous and really that I'd done a lot of things in the world, like make movies and do fabulous air inflatable structures with Bucky Fuller and on and on. And I realized that I really had a lot to learn, and I went into a place of apprenticeship with my teachers, and I've been working with them ever since and writing book after book about, you know, in Tibet and Nepal and in Australia, in South America, all over the world, about my experiences with these women and how they taught me and you.
Well, Lynn, Well, let me take a minute, and because you've sort of, you know, gave me a good segue here to actually give listeners a little bit of information about your bio, because it's an awesome bio. You're the author of the New York Times and internationally best-selling Medicine Woman series, which you mentioned, a 25th anniversary edition of Medicine Woman, which has been translated into over 12 languages, and is in its 46th printing, was released by Jeremy P. Tarcher/Penguin Books in 2006. You're a leader in the field of spirituality and personal development, ranked as one of the top self-improvement experts in the world, and considered preeminent in the field of global shamanic cosmologies. You're the author of 19 books and workbooks, including Woman at the Edge of Two Worlds, A Spiritual Journey Through Menopause, which we're going to discuss more about tonight, and The Power Deck, which are cards of wisdom. You're the creator of Menopause and the Feminine Rites of Passage, which is meditation, ceremonies, and exercises for transformation and joy for all stages of a woman's life, from puberty through menopause. You're the architect of the personal Act of Power, which are tools for spiritual growth and personal empowerement. And one last thing, this is a lifetime of work. You're also a writing teacher, a businesswoman, founder of the Lynn Andrews Center for Sacred Arts and Training, which is in its 14th year, and the Joshua Tree Gathering, which will celebrate the 20th anniversary in 2008. What tenacity, Lynn!
In 2010. Our next Joshua Tree is 2010. Oh, my God. Amazing.
Well, you have quite a body of work here, and all of your travels to other parts of the world, you know, I want to extend an invitation to you to be on my other show, Earth Sacred Places, and talk about some of the learning you have received from these women in these other parts of the world, if you can fit it into your schedule.
Well, surely, because everywhere I go, there are 44 of us in the Sisterhood of the Shields. And the Sisterhood of the Shields is a magnificent gathering of women from all over the world, Native women. And it is the most fabulous group of women who are very secret. And they are completely and totally unknown to most people. And I have been fortunate enough in my life, gifted enough to have been initiated into this group and have been asked to write about my experience with them. So, for instance, Jaguar Woman that takes place in the Yucatan in southern Mexico. The whole teaching is around Soyla and Jose. Soyla is a member of the Sisterhood of the Shields, and she teaches me about addiction, about fears, things that keep us back, the feelings that keep us back from our own process of enlightenment. But she does it through experience, you know. I'll never forget one day, we got up very early one morning. We were in Soyla's hut in the jungle, and we had a light breakfast, and she said, "Come, follow me." And she's a Native woman, Quiche, Mayan, and we started out across the jungle, and we're following this little trail, and I'm just following behind her, and she doesn't say a thing to me, and I just walk and walk, and all of a sudden we come to an incredible gorge cut into the floor of the jungle, and it's called La Caldera, and she says, "Now follow me." Now, she knew I had a fear of heights, and I had kind of dumb shoes on. They weren't really hiking shoes at all. And I started to follow her down this trail, and it was so precipitous and so terrifying because I was looking, you know, a couple thousand feet below me. And there's this little narrow trail that was partially muddy because it had rained the night before. And I start slipping and sliding down this trail, terrified, and I said, "Soyla, I can't follow you. I cannot follow you." And this is a great woman of power, by the way. And most of my teachers are very elder, very, very elder. And yet they're like young people. They walk with no limp. They're very, very strong and beautiful, and yet you can tell that they've had the winds of time blow through their spirit for a long, long time. Anyway, so she's going down the trail, and she turns around to me, and she said, "You will follow me. If you do not, we will never dream you again." And which meant, basically, we will never teach you again, and you're out. You know, you're just done. You may as well just pack your bags and go on home. So it was so important to me to learn what she had to teach me, because this was all about learning and teaching and being not a disciple, but an apprentice, you know, apprentice to power, really. And so I followed her, and I thought, well, surely I'm going to fall into this incredible chasm and be dead. But I managed to get down the trail, of course. She never would have asked me to do it if she didn't know I could do it. And along the way, there was a Nicho on the side of the trail, and there was a magnificent jewel sitting there. And Soyla turned to me, and she said, "Take that. It's for you." And I looked at the jewel, and I felt unworthy and didn't take it, even though she had told me to. So when I got down to the bottom of this chasm, I ended up getting stuck in quicksand. And I went down about up to my waist, and I was stuck there. And Soyla was just sitting on the side watching me. And she gave me an incredible teaching about my addiction to not feeling worthy, how I couldn't take the jewel that had been left there for me, and that being stuck in quicksand is just the same thing as being stuck in our addictions to bad relationships, to feeling unworthy, to all of the things that we're addicted to if we've come out of abuse. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
So the whole story that I write in Jaguar Woman and all my other books are all these incredible teachings that they give me using nature and the mountains and everything from quicksand to the ocean to teach me different things about my own nature, my frailties, and my power.
Well, certainly a testament to the powerful things we can learn that doesn't actually exist in books.
No, but you see, it can exist in books if you can take people. All my books, and none of them are how-to books. They're about, you know, a journey, my experience in Nepal, being with the Nepalese hill woman, Ani, who is one of my teachers, and going into Tibet and all of these things that happened. You can take someone, I have found, Karen, on a journey that you have experienced, and they, in a sense, rewrite that journey as if it's their own.
Well, was there a particular woman that you feel taught you the wisdom of menopause that you're going to share with us tonight?
Well, the wisdom of menopause, there's a goddess, a great goddess woman who is in this book with me, and she's the goddess of fire. And I write this particular book having to do with the fire being born, and what the fire within us is not the horrible hot flashes that every woman seems to go through for the most part, except my own mother. And it's about what the fire really is, about gathering the wood, about death and rebirth and transformation, and what is really happening to your body. Your body is getting ready for the most spiritual time in your life, about from the age of 50 on. And we have a whole litany of fears, like, am I worthy to be a wise one? There's a whole freeway of magic. That magic in the sense of how wonderful it is to recognize who you are and the beauty that you are, the alchemy of hot flashes. What happens is we fight our hot flashes and we make it worse instead of living with them and realizing that hot flashes purify us. they purify not only the negativity, but your literal body DNA. It's kind of a recapitulation, if you will, a gathering of remembering what has happened in your life and healing everything that you can remember, so that instead of fearing hot flashes, you begin to ride that fire. And then you begin to dance the fire, and you learn to live with menopause as a comfort of the spirit. And
so really, it's, well, I mean, we've had a number of shows, because I felt it was so important, about menses and, you know, helping women, you know, rethink their relationship to their sacred blood and see how it is really a powerful time. You know, it's rethinking the programming, you know. And you're saying really the same thing about this. You know, we have to rehabilitate the word menopause so it doesn't clear a room, like you mentioned earlier, or so we don't look at it so negatively.
Well, and you can meet, like Bone Woman is an incredible goddess woman that I met during this, she came to me during a meditation, and she's the keeper of the bones, and she was telling me about how we tend if we believe that this is the over the hill club, that we're now on a downward slide, if we believe that, then we begin to lose our structure in life, and the structure that we have is our bones. And if you lose that structure through the lack of calcium and so forth, then you're slowly dying. You don't need to do that. Remember one thing: is that consciousness comes first, and form comes second. So as you are in spirit, you are in the physical form.
In other words, you're saying that if we start looking at menopause as this downhill slide, you know, this negativity associated with that, we're sort of literally helping our bones to deteriorate.
Well, because what you think you are, you've got to take responsibility for your life. You have to go back. That's why I have a school and my online courses, because you have to learn how you're thinking. What are you doing to yourself? What are you doing to this magnificent energy form that the great spirit, God, the goddess beings gave to you? Well, they gave it to you, but they helped you to learn how to manifest it, in a sense, because who you are and what you are as a body, let's just say for a moment, is something that you created through the way that you think, through your vibration, through your frequency. And you create frequency by the way that you think. So if you're in grief, let's say, a family member has died, your child has been killed, if that happens to you, you're in grief. A terrible grief. But what does that mean? There is more learned through the process of grief, in a way, than almost anything. I think people tend to go into menopause with a sense of grief. Lost their beauty. They've lost their power. They've lost their early life when they were beautiful. Now they feel they're not beautiful. So then they go into the thing of the crone, which I object to. Forgive me, a lot of people love that word. I do not, because it has a connotation of the over-the-hill club. I don't know. I don't like it, because I think that when you are going into wise blood, which is the last half of your life, that it's your spiritual time. It's not the time of the crone, and I know a lot of people define that as the most wonderful thing. To me, it's maintaining your beauty, the beauty that you've always had and that you always will be.
Well, Lynn, how can a woman feel beautiful if she's got all of this programming that has told her otherwise?
Well, you go to work. I mean, there are so many things out there, but, you know, woman at the edge of two worlds. my book on all of this. And then there's a workbook that goes with it. It's one of the ways. Another way is to get involved with somebody's school who I don't know. I mean, I know what we do in our school, and I know that it makes you powerful. It helps you. Wait a minute. That's said incorrectly. What I'm really saying is that you learn how to take your power. You learn how to become the individual that is you. You don't become like me or anybody else. And I think you have to learn that. You've learned how to be self-destructive. Now you have, I mean, as an example. So now you have to learn, how do I take power into my life and feel good about that? And what does that look like? And what do you mean by power? And how do I express that? And that's a lot of work. You spent maybe 50 years living your conditioning. Now you have to let go of that conditioning in many ways. And suddenly be, you know, very, very aware of the snapshots, of the photographs, of the beauty of this life that is all coming in now, because you are done with raising a family and creating, I mean, not that you ever are done raising a family, but you're done growing them up, and they no longer live with you, most likely. And you have your career done, you've done your education, and blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying. So you're
right.
Moving into when you have time to spend with your spiritual life even more than you did before.
So, all right, so you know, that all makes sense. But let's talk about some other practical aspects of this time of menopause. What about sex after menopause? What would you say about that? How should a woman be looking at sex at that time of her life?
Oh, it's wonderful. You don't have to worry about getting pregnant anymore, for one thing. Sex is fabulous after menopause. Or during menopause, for that matter. Why do you ask that?
Well, you know, because so many women, I think, think that as they get older, they're, you know, they lose their sexuality, or maybe our society has said, you know, they aren't sexual beings anymore. You know, that's just, you know, for the younger women. And I think that those messages that they get, you know, hurt their psyche.
Well, you know what? They need to get over that. And I mean, I'm telling you right now, you do not have to become, that's like being a victim of your aging or something. I don't know. But you don't have to feel like that. I write about that in Woman at the Edge. And that's a whole teaching. But let me tell you, you need to work on it, because otherwise you're going to lose the very most powerful time of your life. It's powerful, sexy, it's beautiful, it's has a whole different flavor.
Well, Lynn, we have a caller. I'm going to let the caller onto the switchboard, if that's okay with you.
Well, of course it is.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to see if we can get her connected. Caller from area code 510, are you with us? Caller, can you hear us? You're on the air. What's your question for Lynn? Well, they're not answering, Lynn.
Maybe she'll call back. She'll probably call back.
Okay. Well, she's right there, but for some reason we can't hear her. All right. Well, let's go on to the other question I had for you. You know, you always hear about your hormones during menopause. Do you have any recommendations about, you know, what a woman does about her hormones?
Well, hormones are very, very, obviously they govern, I think estrogen governs about 300 different functions in your body. It's a very interesting thing. I do not believe that we know anywhere near as much as we need to know about hormones, and in particularly estrogen, because women were expected to die at 50, not to live on until we're, you know, 100 or more. So I know that when you are doing a lot of mental work, estrogen is needed to feed the brain. It's needed for the skin and so forth and so on. Okay, I know all this, but I have tried all kinds of natural things. There is the natural, well, anywhere in this country, if you go to a homeopath, they will talk to you about the universal drugstore, I believe it is, and they mix different hormone balance things according to the tests that a doctor takes on you. And the doctor can produce a tremendous report on your DHEA and on your progesterone, testosterone, estrogen, and yes, you should do that. And you should do it often, actually, because it changes. It changes with emotions, with metabolism, and all kinds of things. I do not think that maybe, I don't know even what to tell you, because at times I have thought it was very, very important to take supplementary hormones. But now, I don't know. I'm off all hormones, and I don't have any either. I don't produce much. So okay. I don't know what to tell you. For me, I was miserable without them. So for about 10 or 15 years, I took estrace and progesterone, because you need to take the progesterone Provera to balance out any estrogen you take. That's very important. And I just took that in the lowest dose that they could give me. And then I did the patch. And then I did this and that and the other. And finally, one day, I just said, you know what? I'm not going to do this anymore. I didn't have any more hot flashes, and I just let it all go. And I don't know. I look like I'm only 20.
Well, good for you. Well, your picture on your website is lovely.
I'm so kidding, but you know, I just it's a tremendously difficult subject because I don't think anybody knows. You know,
okay.
The doctors say they know. I think what you have to do is you go in and you get tested and you listen to your body mind. Listen to it. Shut your eyes and close your consciousness down out of your ego mind, out of the mind, and into your body mind, which is right around your plexus. Move your consciousness down there. Keep your eyes closed. Keep your attention and focus there. And ask your body mind to tell you what you should do. Because if your body mind says you need estrogen, then you take it.
Okay.
If it's somehow you have a feeling, gee, I don't really think I need this. You know, it's so personal.
I understand. Well, Lynn, let me see if our caller is listening to us, and she's supposed to, well, I'm he or she. Caller from 510 area code, can you hear us inviting you on the line? Hello? Caller? Well, Lynn, tell us about this Hawaii retreat you have coming up.
Well, the Hawaiian retreat is, I first designed this event as a more intimate event than the one that I always have at the end of May, which is Joshua Tree, which is fabulous. And we've been giving it for 20 years, and there's a band, and there's musicians that have been with me for all of this time, and we do, it's a kind of a Broadway play of the spirit, and you get these incredible experiences, and it changes you, I think. Hawaii is more for the healing, well, they all are, but it's for the healing of your fragmented self this year. I'm going to do soul retrieval. I'm going to... I think many of us have been through a lot of trauma in the last few years, or from childhood as well, and we've never known how to realize and understand that when you're in a trauma, the pieces of you literally fly off into the ethers around you. They don't leave you all together, but they're right there, but they're not part of your wholeness. So no matter what happens in your life, you always feel empty. You always feel like there's something I'm supposed to be learning and I can't find it. What is the meaning of my life? And it's about that. It's about putting yourself back together. And then the latter part of the event is about finances. It's about your spiritual and physical financial world. You know, how are you bankrupt? How are you abundant? And again, as you are in spirit, you are in the physical world. How do you create this? What's the flow, the energetic flow in your life, and how does it affect you? You know, how do you tap into it? And there are a lot of things that you don't know about yourself, like energy knots that you get up your chakra system. We'll work with that. We'll release them so that you can bring in the parts of the puzzle that are missing. So that's what we're doing in Hawaii.
And that's in December, right? December, is it 2nd through 5th?
I think it's December 1st. Third, 2nd, or 5th, and it's all up on my website, lynandrews.com.
Okay, Lynn, I just got a little tip here on maybe I think I might be doing something wrong getting this caller on the line. So I'm going to mute you for just a minute and see if I can get the caller on to ask the question. So don't go anywhere if it sounds like you're disconnected, okay? Just hang in there with me.
Okay.
Caller? Caller, are you there?
I think she appeals a lot to the...
Hello, caller.
Yeah, the rich...
Caller from the 510 area code, do you have a question for Lynn?
Eccentric type rich women or something. You know.
Lynn, you back with me?
I am here.
You know, I could hear a voice in the background, but they just aren't responding, so I'm not sure what that's about. So, well, just a couple more questions, Lynn. You know, going back to the menopause subject, that's the topic for tonight. How would you tell a woman to prepare for menopause? You know, if she's perimenopausal or, you know, she feels it soon, what would you recommend to this woman?
Well, I think I would recommend to her to look at her life as a process of alchemy or transformation, if you will, and that tell her to look at and maybe celebrate now first blood and learn about that. Read my book. There are so many things out there about this. I think, but understanding it as a spiritual journey is what's so important. So you have first blood, and then you're a marriage ceremony, perhaps. And different ceremonies in your life, graduating from high school and college, or many, many things. If you're an alcoholic and now you've been dry for 12 years, that's a celebration. That's a rites of passage. The different things that you've accomplished, you can celebrate those. And wise blood is like a crown of glory, not something, not the curse. It's the time of joy, and I try and lead you through that in Woman at the Edge of Two Worlds. I want you to move through that, and incidentally, you can get these books on my website or on Amazon, almost anywhere. You might have to order them, but they'll be there to you in a couple of days. I also have a wonderful event that I gave. On and off, I've given this, and it's called Rites of Passage. And it's about celebrating the different passages and putting you through different experiences. And if anybody's interested in that, they can certainly go up on my website, and there are people that they can get in touch with. Or if people want to work with me, I can certainly, I work by the hour, and it's on my website, lynandrews.com. But to prepare, I think, is to understand, you know, everything about your emotional, psychological, physical health. Stay in good shape. Take a look at your life on a sacred wheel. South being in the on the south of the wheel, the west, the north at the top, and east over on the right. And take a look at yourself, or join one of our online courses. They're only a month long, and we have four a year. That's very different from the regular school. Or come to Hawaii. Hawaii is, in terms of, it's very cost-effective, and we stay in a beautiful hotel, and they give us wonderful prices. Please come if you can, and visit the education of your soul and the joy of it. You have to start to work on you before menopause, if you possibly can, so that when you get into menopause, you're feeling free and you understand what the process is.
Great. Well, Lynn, so it's obvious then you have, if whenever possible, you have to plan ahead. Plan ahead and, you know, don't try to make changes.
Well, not only that, Karen, but it's educating yourself. Oh, what does it mean? You know what I mean, wise blood? What the heck is she talking about? Well, look at Woman at the Edge of Two Worlds. I mean, it's, I can't just go into it right here. I just blah, blah for an hour.
Well,
wise blood is basically the beginning of your spiritual time in your life. What does that mean? It means that you begin to take responsibility for the life that you're living, more so than ever.
Okay. Well, Lynn, thank you so very much for all the information you've imparted to listeners tonight. It's been interesting, and it's certainly been helpful. And for those of you out there who want to know more about this and Lynn's books and her Hawaii retreat and her online classes, it's real simple to find her. It's lynnandrews.com. And if for any reason you can't find her, just contact me, and I'll be sure I put you in touch. So, Lynn, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, Karen, thank you. Thank you so much for giving us a chance to speak to other people. It's wonderful, and I appreciate it so much.
Well, and I am going to get back in touch with you at another time and schedule you for Earth Sacred Places and, you know, hear about some of these other powerful women you've met in sacred places around the world.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Karen, and have a beautiful summer.
And good night, Lynn.
Well,
listeners, we're going to take a short music break now. I'm going to let you listen to the music of Flash Silvermoon, and this is her song, Dancing with the Snake. And please stay tuned with us, because when this is over, there's some announcements that I don't think you're going to want to miss. So this is Flash Silvermoon and Dancing with the Snake. Well, that was Dancing with a Snake, that slithery, sultry little number by Flash Silvermoon. And our upcoming announcements here are, if you're in the Southern California area, the 6th Conference on Current Pagan Studies is going to be happening again coming up in January 30th and 31st, 2010. And they put out a call for papers, and the topic is sustainability. Sustainability is becoming an extremely important word as we face dwindling fuel resources, water shortages, climate change, and so on. They want to explore what does sustainability mean in practical terms. They're open to many areas of research in the field of pagan studies. However, they're particularly looking for papers that explore pagan theologies, outlooks, artistic values, etc., and whether or not they can be helpful in saving our planet. Remember, they say that their definition of pagan is very broad. It encompasses Wicca, witchcraft, earth-based religions, and other permutations that have risen from the current interest in neo-paganism. They're particularly reaching out to indigenous religions who might not see themselves under the rubric of pagan, but who have a world view of the earth as being alive. They're also reaching out to those who understand that our vision of life affects the quality of that life. They want abstract sent to pagan_conference@yahoo.com. The abstract should be no more than 200 words, and they would like that by October 31st, 2009. That comes from Kahena. So that's the 6th Conference on Current Pagan Studies, which is held in Southern California. Also upcoming is COG, or Covenant of the Goddess, their Merry Meet 2009, is being held in Palmdale, California, August 21st and 23rd at the Palmdale Hotel. Yours truly will be one of the many presenters there that weekend speaking on the sacred feminine for a sustainable future. For more information, you can go to COG-MerryMeet.com. That's COG-MerryMeet.com. And very important, if you know military, that means retired or active military, or military families in the Southern California area, please let them know about the upcoming Kuan Yin ceremony being organized in their honor and held at the Goddess Temple of Orange County on Saturday, September 26th. I know it seems like a long ways away, but please save the date. That is Saturday evening, September 26th. The ceremony is called To Honor and Heal Those Who Serve. No matter how you feel about war and politics, it's these people who sacrifice so for so many of us, and this is their night to be honored, receive healing, and be appreciated by their community. There'll be performances by talented artists who have agreed to come and entertain. Many individuals and businesses have made donations to a silent auction where items will be auctioned off at pennies on the dollar so that the military and their families might avail themselves of some wonderful getaways, services, vacations, art, jewelry, and spiritual items to uplift their spirits. For more information, you can contact me, Karen Tate, 108@ca.rr.com. And in the coming weeks here on Voices of the Sacred Feminine, my next guest will be next week Dr. Linda Stillman. She's a representative of the SOFIA 2010 conference, and we're going to be discussing that upcoming event in Bulgaria. Then on August 19th, Isadora Forrest, the author of Isis Magic and Offerings to Isis, we're going to be talking about magic and energy and Isis, not on a surface level. We're going to get down to the nitty-gritty. And then on August 26th, my guest is Kelly Hunter. She's the author of a book about Lilith, the Cosmic Mother, and Lilith, a very misunderstood goddess. And we're going to try to shed some light on her. And don't forget my new Sunday morning radio show I've made reference to a couple times talking to Lynn. It's called Earth Sacred Places on the CBS affiliate, psychiconair.com. That's psychic singular, not plural, psychiconair.com. The show airs at 8 a.m. Eastern and 5 a.m. Pacific. I know that's early for you people on the West Coast, but you can always catch it Monday morning in the archives. If you want to get up with me, grab a cup of coffee, and we'll board the Armchair Express together and visit sacred places around the globe. We've had wonderful guests talking about goddess connections in Nepal, Malta, Egypt, Sardinia, the Black Madonnas of France, sites in England, Brazil, and sacred places where sacred display figurines have been found. Lots there through the lens of sacred travel and holy places. And in closing, did you know there are free downloadable meditations on my website, KarenTate.com? While you're there, get to know me a little bit better. If you don't know me yet, check out my books, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, and Walking in Ancient Paths. Both have garnered prestigious endorsements, and the newest book has won a place as a finalist in the USA National Best Books of 2008 Awards. I invite you to go to my events page, see if I'll be appearing in a town near you, see what talks I have available to give your group, check out my articles and the links page referring you to people around the world making a difference. Well, tonight, as my first show here on Blog Talk Radio comes to a close, I'd like to leave you with one of my favorite musical pieces by Catlin Breen, dedicated to the Egyptian goddess Sekhmet. So we're going to close out the show with Sekhmet from Catlin Breen.
Sekhmet, the desert, heart, fire.
This is put on by whatever the fucking software you use.